Welcome to the reading of the Quad City Times for December 25th, 2023. Merry Christmas to all who celebrate. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of people with print disabilities. Your readers today are Erica Dubin-Bars and Carol Lockard. Here's our first story. Israeli strike hits Gaza refugee camp. At least 68 killed, 15 Israeli troops have died since Friday. At least 68 people were killed by an Israeli strike in central Gaza, health officials said Sunday, while the number of Israeli soldiers killed in combat over the weekend rose to 15. Associated Press journalists at a nearby hospital watched frantic Palestinians carry the dead, including a baby, and wounded following the strike on the Maghazi refugee camp west of Deir al-Bala. One bloodied young girl looked stunned while her body was checked for broken bones. The 68 fatalities include at least 12 women and 7 children, according to early hospital figures. We were all targeted, said Ahmed Turkmani, who lost several family members, including his daughter and grandson. There is no safe place in Gaza anyway. Earlier, the health ministry in Gaza gave the death toll as 70. The Israeli military had no immediate comment. As Christmas Eve fell, smoke rose over the besieged territory, while in the West Bank, Bethlehem was hushed. In neighboring Egypt, tentative efforts continued on a deal for another exchange of hostages for Palestinians held by Israel. The war has devastated parts of Gaza, killed roughly 20,400 Palestinians, and displaced almost all of the territory's 2.3 million people. The mounting death toll among Israeli troops, 154 since the ground offensive began, could erode public support for the war, which was sparked when Hamas-led militants stormed communities in southern Israel on October 7th, killing 1,200 and taking 240 hostage. Israelis still largely stand behind the country's stated goals of crushing Hamas's governing and military capabilities and releasing the remaining 129 captives. That's despite rising international pressure against Israel's offensive and the soaring death toll and suffering among Palestinians. The war exacts a very heavy price from us, but we have no choice but to continue fighting, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said. In a nationally televised speech, Israeli President Isaac Herzog appealed for the country to remain united. "This moment is a test. We will not break or blink," he said. There has been widespread anger against his government, which many criticize for failing to protect civilians on October 7th and promoting policies that allowed Hamas to gain strength over the years. Netanyahu has avoided accepting responsibility for the military and policy failures. The Israeli military said it completed the dismantling of Hamas's underground headquarters in northern Gaza, part of an operation to take down the vast tunnel network and kill off top commanders that Israeli leaders have said could take months. Efforts toward negotiations continued. The head of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Ziad al-Nakala, arrived in Egypt for talks. The militant group, which also took part in the October 7th attack, said it was prepared to consider releasing hostages only after fighting ends. More than two-thirds of the 20,000 Palestinians killed have been women and children, according to the health ministry in Gaza, which does not differentiate between civilians and combatants. The Palestinian Red Crescent said a 13-year-old boy was shot and killed in an Israeli drone attack while inside Al-Amal Hospital in Khan Yunis, a part of Gaza where Israel's military believes Hamas leaders are hiding. An Israeli strike overnight hit a house in a refugee camp west of the city of Rafah, on Gaza's border with Egypt. At least two men were killed, according to journalists in the hospital where the bodies were taken. At least two people were killed and six others wounded when a missile struck a building in the Bereij refugee camp in central Gaza. Palestinians reported heavy Israeli bombardment and gunfire in Jabalia, an area north of Gaza City that Israel had claimed to control. Hamas's military arm said its fighters shelled Israeli troops in Jabalia and Jabalia refugee camp. Israel faces international criticism for the civilian death toll, but it blames Hamas, citing the militants' use of crowded residential areas and tunnels. Israel launched thousands of airstrikes since October 7th. It says it has killed thousands of Hamas militants. Israel also faces allegations of mistreating Palestinian men and teenage boys detained in homes, shelters, hospitals, and elsewhere during the offensive. It has denied abuse allegations and said those without links to militants are quickly released. Speaking to the AP from a hospital bed in Rafah after his release, Karnas Al-Burnadani of Gaza City said Israeli forces detained him after tanks and bulldozers partly destroyed his home. He said men were handcuffed and blindfolded. "We didn't sleep. We didn't get food and water," he said, crying and covering his face. Another released detainee, Mohammed Salem from the Gaza City neighborhood of Shijaya, said Israeli troops beat them. "We were humiliated," he said. "A female soldier would come and beat an old man, aged 72 years old." The United Nations Security Council this past week passed a resolution calling for the speedy delivery of humanitarian aid for Palestinians and the release of all the hostages, but not for a ceasefire. It was not immediately clear how and when deliveries of food, medical supplies, and other aid, far below the daily average of 500 before the war, would accelerate. While Abu Omar, a spokesman for the Palestinian Crossings Authority, said 123 aid trucks entered Gaza on Sunday.
Bethlehem marks subdued Christmas Eve amid war. From the West Bank, Bethlehem. The typically bustling biblical birthplace of Jesus resembled a ghost town Sunday after Christmas Eve celebrations in Bethlehem were called off due to the Israel-Hamas war. The festive lights and Christmas tree that normally decorate Manger Square were missing, as were the throngs of foreign tourists and jubilant youth marching bands that gather in the West Bank town each year to mark the holiday. Dozens of Palestinian security forces patrolled the empty square. Brother John Vinh, a Franciscan monk from Vietnam who has lived in Jerusalem for 6 years, said this year, without the Christmas tree and without lights, there's just darkness. Vin said he always comes to Bethlehem to mark Christmas, but this year was especially sobering. He gazed at a nativity scene in Manger Square with a baby Jesus wrapped in a white shroud, reminiscent of the thousands of children killed in the fighting in Gaza. Barbed wire surrounded the scene, the gray rubble reflecting none of the joyous lights and bursts of color that normally fill the square during the Christmas season. Cold, rainy weather added to the grim mood. The cancellation of Christmas festivities was a severe blow to the town's economy. Tourism accounts for an estimated 70% of Bethlehem's income, almost all of that during the Christmas season. With many major airlines canceling flights to Israel, few foreigners are visiting. Local officials say over 70 hotels in Bethlehem were forced to close, leaving thousands of people unemployed. Gift shops were slow to open on Christmas Eve, though a few did once the rain stopped pouring down. There were few visitors, however. Ala Salama, one of the owners of Aftim Restaurant, a family-owned falafel restaurant just steps from the square, said, "We can't justify putting out a tree and celebrating as normal when some people in Gaza don't even have houses to go to." Salama said Christmas Eve is usually the business day of the year. "Normally you can't find a single chair to sit. We're full from morning till night," said Salama. On Sunday morning, just one table was taken by journalists taking a break from the rain. Under a banner that read, "Bethlehem's Christmas bells ring for a ceasefire in Gaza," a few teenagers offered a small inflatable Santas, but nobody was buying. Instead of their traditional march through the streets of Bethlehem, young scouts stood silently with flags. A group of local students unfurled a massive Palestinian flag as they stood in silence. An organist with the Church of the Nativity Choir, Shukri Marabuk, said the group changed much of the traditional Christmas musical repertoire from joyful holiday songs to more solemn hymns in minor keys. Bethlehem's mayor, Hannah Hania said in an address to the crowd, Our message every year on Christmas is one of peace and love, but this year it's a message of sadness, grief, and anger in front of the international community with what is happening and going on in the Gaza Strip. Dr. Joseph Magasa, a pediatrician, was one of the few international visitors. He said his tour group of 15 people from Tanzania was determined to come to the region despite the situation. He said, I've been here several times, and it's quite a unique Christmas. As usually, there's a lot of people and a lot of celebrations, but you can't celebrate while people are suffering. So we are sad for them and praying for peace. More than 20,000 Palestinians have been killed and more than 50,000 wounded since Israel's air and ground offensive against Gaza's Hamas rulers, according to health officials there. While some 85% of the territory's 2.3 million residents have been displaced. The war was triggered by Hamas's deadly assault October 7th on southern Israel, in which militants killed about 1,200 people, most of them civilians, and took more than 240 hostages. The Gaza has been accompanied by a surge in West Bank violence, with some 300 Palestinians killed by Israeli fire. The fighting has affected life across the Israeli-occupied territory. Since October 7th, access to Bethlehem and other Palestinian towns in the West Bank has been difficult, with long lines of motorists waiting to pass military checkpoints. The restrictions also prevented tens of thousands of Palestinians from exiting the territory to work in Israel. Amir Mikhail Giacomin opened his store, Il Bambino, which sells olive wood, carvings, and other souvenirs, for the first time since October 7th. There have been no tourists, and few local residents have money to spare because those who work in Israel have been stuck at home. Sophia Giacomin said, when people have extra money, they go buy food. That's the wife of Amir. This year, we're telling the Christmas story. We're celebrating Jesus, not the tree, not Santa Claus, she said, as their daughter Michaela ran around the deserted store. Some tried to find inspiration in the spirit of Christmas. Latin patriarch Piers Battista Pizzaballa, arriving from Jerusalem for the traditional procession to the Church of Nativity, told the sparse crowd that Christmas was a reason to hope, despite the war and violence. The pared-down Christmas was in keeping with the original message of the holiday and illustrated the many ways the community is coming together, said Stephanie Saldana, who is originally from San Antonio, Texas, and has lived in Jerusalem and Bethlehem for the last 15 years with her husband, a parish priest of the St. Joseph Syriac Catholic Church. We feel Christmas as more real than ever because we are waiting for the Prince of Peace to come. Saldana said, we are waiting for a miracle to stop this war.
World War II soldier ID'd nearly 80 years later. After years of combing through military records and making some key deductions, a team of U.S. government historians and researchers has finally put a name to case file X3212, identifying an Army private from eastern New Mexico named Homer Mitchell, who died during World War II. The Defense Prisoner of War Missing in Action Accounting Agency this past week announced the findings, which were confirmed by laboratory testing and brought closure to Mitchell's family members. Mitchell is one of nearly 160 service members who have been accounted for over the last fiscal year as part of a massive, years-long effort headed by the federal agency. The list of service members from various conflicts who have yet to be accounted for tops 81,000, but officials say more than 37,000 of those, mostly from World War II, are considered to be recoverable. Each case can take years and involves poring through old reports and medical records, said Sean Everett, a spokesperson for the agency. work on Mitchell's case began in 2018. Researchers determined that X3212 had to be one of three soldiers who went missing in the Patchton Forest along Germany's western border, with Mitchell being the strongest possibility. It took nearly 3 years just for the historical research part. It then took the lab almost 2 more years before Mitchell could be positively identified, Everett said. Hearing the news was surreal for Mitchell's family, many of whom are military veterans themselves. Scattered from New Mexico to Oklahoma and Texas, they will be gathering next spring in Portales to bury the soldier. Mind-blowing is how his great-niece, Sonia Denin, described the news, noting that it's been nearly 80 years since Mitchell died. Mitchell, the youngest among his siblings, had enlisted in 1943 and underwent training at military bases on the other side of the country before shipping out to Europe. His parents were devastated by his death, and the lack of information back then added to the grief, Denin said Wednesday. He was so young, and it was so painful to them, the way he was lost and not being able to properly bury him, she said. Mitchell, 20, was killed on December 10, 1944, as his battalion was hammered by heavy fire from German forces. The battle came just months after he and tens of thousands of other troops landed in Normandy and began their push toward Germany. The intensity of the mortar and artillery strikes during that December battle made recovering the casualties impossible. It wasn't until after the war that the American Graves Registration Command was tasked with investigating and recovering missing American personnel in Europe. They conducted investigations in the area between 1946 and 1950. They were unable to identify Mitchell's remains among what was found and officially declared him killed in action in November 1951. It was learned that after the battle, someone buried Mitchell along with three other soldiers at the civilian cemetery in Hütersdorf, Germany. Those unidentified remains were eventually interred in France, where they had remained until 2021, when historians were able to solidify the link to Mitchell. Work by the agency's laboratory then ensued. They do have a methodical way of going about it, Denin said. But yes, it was comforting to know that when he was initially buried, whoever it was took care to make sure that he was laid to rest. Despite remaining family members never getting the chance to know Mitchell, Denin said they all know of him. An old oval-framed portrait of him hung in the home of Denin's great-grandmother until her death. It was passed down to her grandmother and then to her father, who insisted that she take it one day. That portrait will accompany Denin and her family for the trip to Portales in the spring, so it can be displayed during Mitchell's burial.
Okay, folks, I'm not finding a local page today, and so no obituaries today, and no opinions either. So I think we're just kind of jump around and just pick what other articles we think you might be interested in. Here's something from the advice page. What to watch if you are a TV watcher? All times are central. Start times can vary based on the cable or satellite provider. And confirm times. It says confirm times on your on-screen guide. Their first suggestion is Doctor Who. If you're a follower of Doctor Who, it's a Christmas special put out by Disney. In The Church on Ruby Road, Nakuti Ngatwa makes his debut as the 15th Doctor in this special holiday installment of the long-running British sci-fi series, with Billy Gibson also making her first appearance as Ruby Sunday, the Doctor's companion. Long ago on Christmas Eve, a baby was abandoned in the snow. Today, Ruby meets the Doctor, stolen babies, goblins, and perhaps the secret of her birth. Their second suggestion, the original Yule log on Antenna TV beginning at 4 a.m. Odd time. Enjoy the crackling sounds of a cozy fireplace accompanied by delightful tunes celebrating the season in this 5-hour broadcast of the original televised Yule log, which originally aired on New York's WPIX beginning in 1966. Disney Parks Magical Christmas Day Parade, ABC, It's on ABC. Oh, that was at 9 p.m. 9 a.m. Yes, we're past that. NBC at 7 p.m. tonight, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. In this original 1966 animated TV special based on Dr. Seuss's classic story, Boris Karloff narrates and voices the title of the Grinch, who schemes to steal every material vestige of Christmas from the Whos of Whoville. But the Grinch ultimately discovers he can't remove the spirit of Christmas from the Who's heart. The Floor at 7 p.m. tonight is on Fox. Rob Lowe hosts this quiz show in which 81 players who proclaim to be experts in a unique category occupy a space on a grid. A player is chosen at random to challenge another contestant in a fast-paced duel of knowledge, with the winner claiming the loser's space. Over 10 weeks, the player who conquers all the spaces on the floor wins $250,000. Oh, this says the series premieres January 2nd. That is not today. Call the Midwife, 2023 holiday special. It's on PBS at 7 p.m. 2 weeks before Christmas, delicate situations cause uncertainty for the midwives with the upcoming Apollo 8 launch and the festivity preparations starting. A treacherous heavy snowfall may complicate the holiday celebrations for everyone. And another, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, NBC. Oh, this is but a different time. That was at 7, the first one. This one at 7:30. Both NBC. That's very strange. I don't understand this, but this is a different narrator. Jim Carrey. That's why it's different. Jim Carrey plays Dr. Seuss's titular meanie in this 2000 live-action adaptation directed by Ron Howard. For the next CBS at 8 o'clock, Mariah Carey, Merry Christmas to All. Filmed at New York City's Madison Square Garden, this two-hour concert special from 2022 features Mariah Carey performing a repertoire of her festive holiday hits, including the perennial favorite, All I Want for Christmas Is You. And then at the bottom of the page, catch a classic. It says, have a merry classic Christmas with a day of beloved holiday-related films on Movies and on Turner Classic Movies. Okay, this is it says the lineup of movies begins early with O. Henry's Full House. That was from 1952. An anthology of O. Henry's short story adaptations, including his famous Christmas tale, The Gift of the Magi. The lineup continues with the Rat Pack flick Robin and the Seven Hoods from 1964, and then Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus from 1991 with Richard Thomas, Edward Asner, and Charles Bronson. The Night They Saved Christmas from 1984, starring Jacqueline Smith and Art Carney. Mrs. Santa Claus, 1996, featuring Angela Lansbury in the title role. Meet Me in St. Louis from 1944, the famed Judy Garland musical, 1951's The Christmas Carol, and there is a picture from there. That's led by Alistair Sim as Scrooge, an American Christmas Carol, 1979, starring Henry Winkler. A Christmas Memory, 1997, with Patty Duke. The 12 Days of Christmas Eve from 2004, led by Stephen Weber and Molly Shannon. And Christmas Comes to Willow Creek, 1987, with John Schneider, Tom Wopat, and Kim Delaney. And let's see. We have Christmas Marathon concludes. TCM's week-long Christmas movie marathon wraps up today, with a lineup featuring Bachelor Mother from 1939, All Mine to Give from 1957, Never Say Goodbye from 1946, Holiday Affair from 1949, The Apartment from 1960, The Man Who Came to Dinner from 1942, and In the Good Old Summertime from 1949. The day concludes with the James Stewart-led Hitchcock classics, Vertigo from 1958, Rear Window from 1954, The Man Who Knew Too Much from 1956 and Rope from 1948.
We'll now do some technology reviews. Ear Candy, 5 wireless earbuds that are worth a listen. True wireless earbuds are popular buys, and you can't go wrong with the well-known white ones, but there are many options that boast other features, some with smaller prices. Here are a few earbuds to check out. Jabra Elite 10. Jabra's Elite 10 True Wireless Earbuds, $249.99, have a feature that is high on my list, all-day comfort. Jabra's Comfort Fit technology has a unique ear gel design that helps relieve in-ear pressure. The sound pumps out of Dolby-powered 10mm speakers. For hands-free calls, 6 microphone technology makes these buds shine. Jabra Advanced Active Noise Cancellation works well, and is touted by Jabra as twice as strong in performance compared to their standard ANC. The Elite 10s are easy to control, with on-ear actual buttons, offering greater control and precision when using your earbuds on the go. The battery life with the included storage charging case, USB-C, and key will yield 36 hours with the ANC off and 27 hours with the ANC on. The Elite 10 is available in 11 colors at Jabra.com. Jabra Elite 8 Active. Jabra's Elite 8 Active True Bluetooth 5.3 Wireless Earbuds, $179.99, are perfect for the active or athletic user. Constructed with military-grade durability and an IP68 rating, the Elite 8 Active Earbuds are waterproof, sweatproof, dustproof, and drop-resistant. Those using them in highly active sports will like the Shake Grip technology, which keeps the Elite 8 earbuds in place without shifting. Sound from the 6mm speakers is powered by Dolby Audio and is assisted by adaptive hybrid active noise cancellation. A 6-microphone system keeps calls crystal clear, including windproof call technology. The battery is rated for music play with the ANC off up to 56 hours or 32 hours with the ANC on. Color choices of the Elite 8 include black, mint, navy, dark gray, and caramel at Jabra.com. Status Audio Between 3 ANC. Status Audio's Between 3 ANC True Bluetooth 5.2 wireless earbuds, $199, have 3 drivers, 2 balanced armature drivers, and 1 10mm dynamic driver in each earbud. What this means to the user is a crystal clear sound with a deep bass. They feature active noise cancellation up to 38 decibels and transparency mode to hear your outside surroundings. With an IPX5 water-resistant rating, active users won't have to worry about sweat, splashes, or getting caught in the rain on a bike ride or run. Hands-free calls will broadcast your voice with supreme clarity from 6 microphones with environmental noise reduction. The battery life will play for 8 hours of continuous audio playback with the ANC on, or 12 hours of playback with it off. Add the wireless charging case and you'll be up to 24 additional hours. Available in bone, white, or onyx black at status.co. House of Marley Little Bird True. While the cost of true wireless earbuds can strain a budget, House of Marley recently launched the Little Bird True Wireless Bluetooth 5.3 earbuds for a wallet-friendly $39.99. The craftsmanship of the Little Birds is first class with an eco-friendly design crafted from bamboo and recycled plastics. They have a battery life of 6 hours and up to 24 with 3 more charges from the included USB-C charging/storage case. The sound they produce is clear and crisp from the 10mm high-definition drivers. The touch controls work well for all the basics: volume, play, pause, track selection, etc. Plus, they give you an alert when the sound is switched. The internal microphone works well for hands-free calls, and the Little Bird earbuds have a mode to enhance the sound while gaming or watching movies. From thehouseofmarley.com. One Audio Open Rock S. One Audio's latest, the Open Rock S Open Ear Conduction Bluetooth 5.3 earbuds at $89.99, are ideal for athletic use and built with a patented adjustable ear hook design. And they also have great sound with the help of Own Audio's patented tube-based technology and its dynamic audio algorithm. Touch controls on the earbuds work well for all the basic functions, and four advanced AI-powered noise-canceling microphones allow for perfect voice transmission on hands-free calls. The ear hook design ensures they stay in place, even during the most active pursuits. The earbuds don't go into your ear canal. Instead, they rest on your ear, supported by the ear hook. This design is ideal for bikers, runners, or any other activity where you still want to hear your outside surroundings. They have an IPX5 water-resistant rating to allow use in light rain or when sweat is an issue indoors. The battery life is rated 60 hours with the 750 mAh USB-C charging storage case. The earbuds on their own will produce about 19 hours of playtime. Available in black or light khaki from oneaudio.com. You are listening to the Quad City Times on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.
And as I mentioned before, today we have no local page and we have no obituaries or funeral announcements. And since we also have no opinions, we'll continue on with other articles in the paper and maybe wind up with a sports item or two. This is from the Christmas page. It says, a by-the-numbers look at the holiday. These are just kind of fun facts. Shopping and spending. Did you know that $17.3 billion is the estimated retail sale for the nation's department stores in December of 2022? Did you know that 13.5% is the estimated percentage that December's sales accounted for of total hobby, toy, and game store sales in 2022? And did you know that $121.3 billion is the estimated value of retail sales by electronic shopping and mail order houses in December of 2022, the highest estimated total for any month in the last year? And did you know that $374.6 million is the value of U.S. imports of LED Christmas tree lights for 2022? Cambodia led the way with 66% of the total U.S. imports of LED Christmas lights. And then they have a little percentages of where consumers shopped. $875 is what the average American will spend on gifts and other items for the holidays this year. And where they shop online, 58% of people shop online. 49% shop in the department store. 48% in a discount store. 44% in a grocery store. Clothing store is 32%, local and small business 24%, electronics store 20%, craft store 16%, outlet stores 14%, and a thrift store just a meager 13%. Type of gift card types. The top 10, 30% of gift cards are purchased from restaurants. 26 are bank issued, 26%. Another 26% is department store cards. 21% is coffee shops. 17% is entertainment. Online merchants, 15%. Grocery stores and gas, 15%. Electronic stores, these are all for gift card types. Electronic stores, 13%. Food delivery, 12%. Bookstore, 11%. And across the U.S., 2022 population totals of festive-sounding places in the United States. Garland, Texas. They have a population of 240,854. Holly Springs, Georgia. Population 18,739. Mount Holly, North Carolina. 18,170 population. Holly Hill, Florida. Population 13,076. Holly Springs. Holly is a popular name for a town, I guess. Holly Springs, Mississippi, 6,823 population. Snowflake, Arizona, has a population of 6,524. Oh, and we have more Holly on the next row here. Holly Village, Michigan, a festive place, population 5,927. Santa Claus, Indiana, population 2,601. That definitely sounded Christmassy. North Pole, Alaska, 2,373 people live there. Noel, Missouri, 2,148 is the population. Dasher, Georgia, 918. That's a small, rather small town, I guess, but Dasher's a well-known reindeer. And the final one on this list is Holly Pond, Alaska, with a population of 843.
Now for some sports. Playing on Christmas, a welcome gift for the NBA. Eric Spoelstra was part of 12 Christmas games as a staff member, assistant coach, or head coach in his first 20 seasons with the Miami Heat. And in the 8 seasons that followed, the Heat played on Christmas only once. Here's what he realized. For an NBA team, playing on Christmas beats not playing on Christmas. The Heat returned to the league's holiday slate for the first time since 2020 on Monday, when they play host to the Philadelphia 76ers as part of the NBA's traditional Christmas quintuple header. The other games: Milwaukee at New York, Golden State visits defending champion Denver, Boston visits the Los Angeles Lakers in the rekindling of the NBA's greatest all-time rivalry, and Dallas goes to Phoenix. It is an honor to have that opportunity to play on Christmas, Spoelstra said. The whole league doesn't play on the holiday, and there were several years in a row where we were never even considered for playing on Christmas. And then you go back, you almost took it for granted that we were always playing on Christmas. Other teams also insist they don't take it for granted. Golden State playing on Christmas has become a holiday tradition. The Warriors are on the December 25th schedule for the 13th time in the last 14 years. And Warriors guard Stephen Curry still gets excited about what awaits. Marquee games on Christmas. It's going to be a great atmosphere, Curry said. You know, we've been in that environment before, so I understand what it's going to be like. On the road, it's going to be fun to just compete. It's a test. The Christmas slate was long considered the unofficial point in the NBA schedule where more fans start paying attention. Football is winding down, and the NBA games are all shown nationally either on ABC or ESPN. LeBron James will pay attention too, but not until certain other Christmas business is complete. The NBA's all-time leading scorer has played more games on December 25th than anyone in league history, though his top priority entering the holiday is watching 9-year-old daughter Zuri light up when she rips the wrapping paper off what's coming her way. The only thing I care about Monday right now is my daughter waking up and opening her gifts, James said Saturday, after he and the Los Angeles Lakers beat Oklahoma City. The Heat planned a short practice for Christmas Eve morning. They were getting most of Sunday off, along with Christmas morning. Players aren't due at the arena until Monday afternoon for the game, with Spoelstra trying to make sure everyone gets time to celebrate as they wish.
And from NFL Roundup, the Dolphins break through and beat the Cowboys to reach the playoffs. This is Dateline Miami Gardens, Florida. Jason Sanders kicked his fifth field goal of the game, a 29-yarder, as time expired, and the Miami Dolphins secured a playoff berth with a 22-20 victory over the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. Tua Tagovailoa threw for 293 yards and a touchdown for the AFC East leading Dolphins, who beat a team with a winning record for the first time this season. He connected with Tyreek Hill twice on the decisive drive, which covered 64 yards, and took the final 3 minutes and 27 seconds off the clock. Hill, who leads the NFL in receiving yards, had 9 catches for 99 yards after missing last week's victory over the New York Jets with an ankle injury. Dak Prescott went 20 of 32 for 253 yards and two touchdowns for the Cowboys, who have clinched a playoff spot but fell a half game behind Philadelphia in the NFC East. Prescott put Dallas in front 20-19 with an 8-yard touchdown pass to leaping Brandon Cooks in the corner of the end zone, but the Cowboys were haunted by their red zone struggles, including a fumble by Prescott on first and goal from inside the first on inside the one on Dallas's first possession. Sanders' first field goal was a career-long 57-yarder in the first quarter. He added kicks of 52, 54, and 35 yards to help the Dolphins take a 19-10 lead late in the third. And for the Lions and the Vikings, the Lions, oh boy, Detroit clinched its first division title in 30 years using two rushing touchdowns from Jahmy Gibbs and 106 receiving yards and a third-quarter go-ahead score by Amon-Ra St. Brown to overtake injury-ravaged Minnesota in Minneapolis. The score was Lions 30, Vikings 24. Ifeto Melifonwu picked off Nick Mullins at the 5-yard line with 49 seconds left for Detroit's fourth interception of the game, an off-target pass to an open Justin Jefferson 3 plays after his leaping grab in double coverage on 3rd and 27 kept the last-minute drive alive. Next item, Browns 36, Texans 22. Amari Cooper set a franchise record with 265 yards receiving and scored 2 touchdowns and a 2-point conversion to move visiting Cleveland closer to a playoff berth and a victory over Houston. Cooper's performance moved him atop the Browns record book ahead of Josh Gordon, who had 261 yards receiving against Jacksonville on December 1st of 2013, 10 years ago. Next item, Packers 33. The Panthers 30. Jordan Love threw for 2 touchdowns, ran for 1, made 2 big completions to set up Anders Carlson's 32-yard field goal with 19 seconds left as Green Bay survived a fourth-quarter rally by Carolina to beat the host Panthers and keep its playoff hopes alive. Love threw touchdown passes of 21 yards to rookie Dante Vicks and 5 yards to Romeo Dobbs and scored on a second back sneak as the Packers snapped a 2-game losing streak. The Falcons 29 and the Colts 10. Taylor Heineke provided the turn back free leadership at quarterback Atlanta has sought all season, passing for 229 yards and a touchdown to lead the Falcons to a home victory over Indianapolis. Heineke completed 23 of 33 passes, including a 24-yard touchdown pass to Kyle Pitts. Tyler Allgeier added a 31-yard touchdown run. And Seahawks 20, Titans 17, Geno Smith threw his second touchdown pass of the fourth quarter on a 5-yarder to Colby Parkinson with a 57 seconds left on the clock, and Seattle kept its playoff hopes alive by beating host Tennessee for its second straight victory. The Seahawks still need to win. They're out to get help to clinch their second playoff berth in 3 seasons. Jets 30, Commanders 28. Greg Zuerlein kicked a 54-yard field goal with 5 seconds left, rescuing the Jets after they blew a 20-point lead in the third quarter and New York beat Washington at home. Trevor Siemian finished 27 of 49 for 217 yards with a touchdown pass and an interception in his first start in place of the injured Zach Wilson. Buccaneers 30, Jaguars 12. Baker Mayfield threw for 283 yards and 2 touchdowns to help NFC South leading Tampa Bay beat Trevor Lawrence and reeling Jackson at home for its fourth straight victory. The Jaguars lost their fourth game in a row, this time with Lawrence starting but struggling to find a rhythm after spending the past week in concussion protocol. Bears 27, Cardinals 16. Justin Fields threw for a touchdown and ran for another score, and host Chicago beat Arizona. Tight end Cole Kmet caught four passes for a career-high 107 yards, despite missing the second half because of a knee injury. And the final, Patriots 26, Broncos 23. Chad Ryland made a career-long 56-yard field goal with 2 seconds left, and New England delivered a near-fatal blow to Denver's playoff hopes with a road stunner. The Patriots scored a pair of touchdowns in a 6-second span on the third quarter, then fended off a furious fourth-quarter rally by the Broncos.
Now for a little bit of today in history. Today's highlight: on December 25th, 1776, General George Washington and his troops crossed the Delaware River for a surprise attack against Hessian forces at Trenton, New Jersey, during the American Revolutionary War. On this date, at other points in history, in AD 336, the first known commemoration of Christmas on December 25th took place in Rome. In 1066, William the Conqueror was crowned King of England. In 1818, Silent Night, Stille Nacht, was publicly performed for the first time during the Christmas Midnight Mass at the Church of St. Nicholas in Oberndorf, Austria. In 1926, Hirohito became Emperor of Japan, succeeding his father, Emperor Yoshihito. In 1946, comedian and actor W.C. Fields died in Pasadena, California at age 66. In 1977, comedian and filmmaker Sir Charles Chaplin died in Switzerland at age 88. In 1989, ousted Romanian President Nicolae Ceausescu and his wife Elena were executed following a popular uprising. In 1991, Soviet President Mikhail S. Gorbachev went on television to announce his resignation as the eighth and final leader of a communist superpower that had already gone out of existence. In 1999, Space Shuttle Discovery's astronauts finished their repair job on the Hubble Space Telescope and released it back into orbit. In 2003, 16 people were killed by mudslides that swept over campgrounds in California's San Bernardino Valley. In 2009, passengers aboard Northwest Airlines Flight 253 foiled an attempt to blow up the plane as it was landing in Detroit by seizing Umar Farouk Abdul-Muttalib, who tried to set off explosives in his underwear. Abdul-Muttalib later pleaded guilty and was sentenced to life in prison. In 2012, Chicago mobster Frank Calabrese Sr. died in a federal prison in North Carolina at age 75. In 2017, Russian election officials formally barred opposition leader Alexei Navalny from running for president, prompting him to call for a boycott of the March 2018 vote. In 2020, a recreational vehicle parked in the deserted streets of downtown Nashville exploded early Christmas morning, damaging dozens of bridges and grounding holiday travel at the city's airport. Investigators later determined that the bomber, a 63-year-old Nashville-area man, was killed in the explosion.
Okay, running out of articles here. Here's one. It's lifestyles, all that jazzberry. It's about gardening. This award-winning bloom is worth a try in next year's garden. This time of year is fun for the garden writer as we get the opportunity to look forward to 2024. This week, the focus is Supertunia, Vista Jazzberry Petunia, Proven Winners, 2024 Annual of the Year. Proven Winners is a recognizable brand in the green industry, and in most cases, it's what the name says it is, a winner. Supertunia Vista Jazzberry Petunia is a prime example. It made its debut in 2021, which is also when I started trialing it, and the year the awards started piling up. To date, Supertunia Vista Jazzberry has won 32 awards that are in print. 7 of those awards have been Perfect Score. The where of these perfect scores speak volumes. University of Georgia and University of Minnesota, which covers north to south. Then there's University of Tennessee and Oklahoma State in the middle. And then there are gold medals in Illinois and directors select at Penn State. You're getting the idea. The other awards were top performer awards from Oregon State, Ohio State, Delaware, North Dakota, university locations in Ontario and Quebec, Canada. The Supertunia Vista Jazzberry Petunia Trophy case will most likely be expanding. Every year I see gardeners asking the age-old question, I love my bubble gums, but what else can I try? In truth, the answer is any of the Supertunia Vista series, but by all means, if you have not tried Supertunia Vista Jazzberry Petunia, make next year your test. See if you would like to give it a top performer like my old stomping ground, Mississippi State University. Like the others, it will mound up 12 to 24 inches in height and spread outward, or tumble 36 inches. This means that in a container or basket, you can create an incredible show. In containers like we like to use, controlled release granules at planting and switch over to water-soluble mixes, feeding every 2 to 3 weeks. Of course, the Supertunia Vistas are known for their landscape superiority, too. The one thing that all great Supertunia Vista beds have in common is soil preparation. Beds are organic-rich and freely drained to give you the best chances to have that floral show mimicking a carpet of color. In Georgia, I've had good success planting both October and in the spring. An application of granular fertilizer at time of soil preparation will get you going, followed by a second application in midsummer. A water-soluble mix also does really well. In the South, most of us do find that there will be time to trim back by one-third. It's usually around the 1st of August for me and gets us ready for the fall show. Supertunia Vista Jazzberry Petunia is called bright purple on the tag and is a true complementary color would be yellow, like Supertunia Mini Vista Yellow Petunia, or luscious Citron Lantana. Oh, Lantana is very pretty. The ultimate in contrast, however, is pairing it with Superbina Whiteout Verbena. So far, I have yet to find a partner that cannot work. Like all the other Supertunias, the Vista Jazzberry will bring the Eastern Tiger Swallow Buttertail Fly butterflies and get their visits from the ruby-throated hummingbird, which is certainly befitting the top performer at the Cincinnati Zoo, too, and the Supertunia Vista Jazzberry. Add it to your list of must-have plants for 2024.
And let's round things off with a little bit of Ask Amy. All hail the toy kitchen. Dear readers, a recent question from Wondering Parents raised the topic of giving gender-stereotypical toys to children. Wondering Parents were admonished for wanting to give a toy kitchen set to their daughter for Christmas. This question, and my response, brought on a huge response from readers reminiscing about and praising the qualities of toy kitchens. Who knew? Here is a sampling of those responses. Dear Amy, more than 30 years ago, our son wanted a toy kitchen for Christmas. My husband was against it. He thought it was a, quote, girl toy, unquote. Ironically, a grocery store was giving a toy kitchen away. My son won it. He played with that kitchen for years. He is now an incredible chef and loves his craft. From Colleen. Dear Amy, I have 2 boys, ages 6 and 3, who show every sign of loving gender-typical toys like cars and trucks. They also love the toy kitchen we bought when our older one was 3. They see both mom and dad cooking meals and contributing to the house and want to do the same. We continue to enjoy cups of fake coffee and wooden pizza. From Happy Parents. Dear Amy, our neighbors have 2 kids, a girl and a boy, 6 months apart in age. One was adopted at birth. The little girl is a wild child in the best way. She plays with insects, snakes, rocks, etc. She is an outdoorsy person. The little boy plays with dolls and kitchen things. When he was asked about this, he said, I'm playing house and I'm the dad. From Proud Neighbor. Dear Amy, when I was 3, My constant companion was a doll named Karen Marie, the name I would have been given if I'd been born a girl. Ours was a traditional Idaho family. Mom was a housewife, and Dad was a railroader and farmer. I evolved to play with, quote, boy toys, unquote, but my brother and I were very happy when he accidentally received a child's cookbook at a school gift exchange. We enjoyed making dishes from it for years. Think animal cracker salad. I no longer carry a doll, but still do all the family cooking. From Old Woodpile. And last one. Dear Amy, my dad built a toy kitchen for us for use in our basement playroom. All of us played with it extensively, and all of us, including my brother, are excellent cooks and enjoy cooking. I kept that toy kitchen, and now my granddaughter and grandson play with it. My daughter has made an exchangeable top that turns the kitchen into a doctor's office. From Bases Covered. That brings us to the end of the Quad City Times for today. I'm Erica Dubenbars, and my partner at the microphone has been Carol Lockard. You can listen to IRIS programs on any computer or smart device at any time at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening to IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.